Chapter 27. Strange glamour was ended. It seemed to me that, when I was so fixed, so transfixed in the broken chair, the man floated up to the ceiling, crossed his legs, folded his arms, as if he was lying on the sofa, and grinned down at me. When I came to myself, he was down from the ceiling, and, taking me out of the broken cane-bottom chair, kindly enough, said he, "It is the smell of my medicine. It often gives the vertigo. I thought you would have had a little fit. Come into the open air." And we went down the steps, and into Shepherd's Inn, where the setting sun was just shining on the statue of Shepherd. The laundresses were traipsing about, the porters were leaning against the railings, and the clerks were playing at marbles, to my inexpressible consolation. "You said you were going to dine at the Gray's Inn Coffee House," he said. "I was. I often dine there. There is excellent wine at the Gray's Inn Coffee House, but I declare I never said so." I was not astonished at his remark, no more astonished than if I was in a dream. Perhaps I was in a dream. Is life a dream? Are dreams facts? Is sleeping being really awake? I don't know. I tell you, I am puzzled. I have read The Woman in White, The Strange Story, not to mention that story, Stranger Than Fiction, in the Cornhill magazine, that story for which three credible witnesses are ready to vouch. I have had messages from the dead, and not only from the dead, but from people who never existed at all. I own I am in a state of much bewilderment. But, if you please, we'll proceed with my simple, my artless story. Well then. We passed from Shepherd's Inn into Holborn, and looked for a while at Woodgate's bric-a-brac shop, which I never can pass without delaying at the windows. Indeed, if I were going to be hung, I would beg the cart to stop, and let me have one look more at that delightful omnium gatherum. And passing Woodgate's, we come to Gale's little shop, No. 47, which is also a favorite haunt of mine. Mr. Gale happened to be at his door, and as we exchanged salutations, "Mr. Pinto," I said, "will you like to see a real curiosity in this curiosity shop? Step into Mr. Gale's little back room. In that little back parlor there are Chinese gongs, there are old Saxe and Sever's plates, there is Furstenberg, Carl Theater, Worcester, Amstel, Nankin and other Jim Crockery. And in the corner, what do you think there is? There is an actual guillotine. If you doubt me, go and see Gale, High Holborn, number 47. It is a slim instrument, much slighter than those which they make now, some 9 feet high, narrow, a pretty piece of upholstery enough. There is the hook over which the rope used to play which unloosened the dreadful axe above, and look. Dropped into the orifice, where the head used to go, there is the axe itself, all rusty, with a great notch in the blade." As Pinto looked at it, Mr. Gale was not in the room, I recollect, happening to have been just called out by a customer who offered him £3.14 for a blue shepherd in pay tender. Mr. Pinto gave a little start, and seemed crisp for a moment. Then he looked steadily towards one of those great porcelain stools which you see in gardens, and it seemed to me, I tell you, I won't take my affidavit, I may have been maddened by the 6 glasses I took of that pink elixir, I may have been sleepwalking. Perhaps as I write now I may have been under the influence of that astounding medium into whose hands I had fallen, but I vow I heard Pinto say, with rather a ghastly grin at the porcelain stool, "Hey, Nefer shag your gory locks at me, thou canst not say I did it." He pronounced it, by the way, "I did it," by which I know that Pinto was a German. I heard Pinto say those very words, and sitting on the porcelain stool I saw, dimly at first, then with an awful distinctness, a ghost, a needle on a form, a headless man seated, with his head in his lap, which wore an expression of piteous surprise. At this minute, Mr. Gale entered from the front shop to show a customer some Delft plates, and he did not see, but we did, the figure rise up from the porcelain stool, shake its head, which it held in its hand, and which kept its eyes fixed sadly on us, and disappear behind the guillotine. Come to the Gray's Inn Coffee House, Pinto said, comma, and I will tell you how the nudge came to the X. And we walked down Holborn at about 37 minutes past 6 o'clock. If there is anything in the above statement which astonishes the reader, I promise him that in the next chapter of this little story he will be astonished still more. Part 2. You will excuse me, I said, to my companion, for remarking that when you addressed the individual sitting on the porcelain stool, with his head in his lap, your ordinarily benevolent features, this, I confess, was a bouncer, for between ourselves a more sinister and ill-looking rascal than Mons. P. I have seldom set eyes on your ordinarily handsome face, wore an expression that was by no means pleasing. You grinned at the individual just as you did at me when you went up to the CI, pardon me, as I thought you did when I fell down in a fit in your chambers. And I qualified my words in a great flutter and tremble. I did not care to offend the man. I did not dare to offend the man. I thought once or twice of jumping into a cab and flying, of taking refuge in Day and Martin's blacking warehouse, of speaking to a policeman. But not one would come. I was this man's slave. I followed him like his dog. I could not get away from him. So, you see, I went on meanly conversing with him, and affecting a simpering confidence. I remember, when I was a little boy at school, going up fawning and smiling in this way to some great hulking bully of a sixth form boy. So I said, in a word, your ordinarily handsome face wore a disagreeable expression, and see, it is ordinarily very handsome, said he, with such a leer at a couple of passers-by, that one of them cried, oh, crikey, here's a precious guy, and a child, in its nurse's arms, screamed itself into convulsions. H. Ow, Jesus Christ, Joel I Garkin, Bean Po, Sir Damon, continued Mr. Pinto. But you were right. That person was not very well pleased when he saw me. There was no love lost between us, as you say, and the world never knew a more worthless miscreant. I hate him, voyez vous? I hated him alive. I hate him dead. I hate him man. I hate him ghost. And he know it, and tremble before me. If I see him 20,000 years hence, and why not? I shall hate him still. You remarked how he was dressed? In black satin breeches and striped stockings, a white peak waistcoat, a gray coat, with large metal buttons, and his hair in powder. He must have worn a pigtail only it was cut off. Ha, ha, ha! Mr. Pinto cried, yelling a laugh, which I observed, made the policeman stare very much. S. It was cut off by the same blow which took off the scoundrel's head. Ho, ho, ho! And he made a circle with his hook-nailed finger round his own yellow neck, and grinned with a horrible triumph. Promise you that fellow was surprised, when he found his head in the pannier. Ha! Ha! Do you ever cease to hate those whom you hate? Fire flashed terrifically from his glass eye, as he spoke, to love those whom you once loved. Oh, never, never! And here his natural eye was bedewed with tears. But here we are at the Gray's Inn Coffee House. James, what is the joint? That very respectful and efficient waiter brought in the bill of fare, and I, for my part, chose boiled leg of pork and peace pudding, which my acquaintance said would do as well as anything else, though I remarked he only trifled with the peace pudding, and left all the pork on the plate. In fact, he scarcely ate anything. But he drank a prodigious quantity of wine, and I must say that my friend Mr. Hart's port wine is so good that I myself took, well, I should think, I took 3 glasses. Yes, 3, certainly. Mr. P., the old rogue, was insatiable. For we had to call for a second bottle in no time. When that was gone, my companion wanted another. A little red mounted up to his yellow cheeks as he drank the wine, and he winked at it in a strange manner. Remember, said he, musing, when port wine was scarcely drunk in this country, though the Queen liked it, and so did Harley, but Bolingbroke didn't, he drank Florence and champagne. Dr. Swift put water to his wine. Jonathan, I once said to him, but bah, others tempts, others mirrors. Another magnum, James. This was all very well. Why, good sir, I said, it may suit you to order bottles of 20 port at a guinea a bottle, but that kind of price does not suit me. I only happen to have 34 and 6 pence in my pocket, of which I want a shilling for the waiter, and 18 pence for my cab. You rich foreigners and swells may spend what you like, I had him there. For my friend's dress was as shabby as an old clothesman's, but a man with a family, Mr. What do you call him, cannot afford to spend 700 or 800 a year on his dinner alone. Bah, he said. And he pays for all, as you say. I will what you call stand the dinner, if you are so poor. And again he gave that disagreeable grin, and placed an odious crooked nailed, and by no means clean finger to his nose. But I was not so afraid of him now, for we were in a public place, and the 3 glasses of port wine had, you see, given me courage. What a pretty snuff box, he remarked, as I handed him mine, which I am still old-fashioned enough to carry. It is a pretty old gold box enough, but valuable to me especially as a relic of an old, old relative, whom I can just remember as a child, when she was very kind to me. S. A pretty box. I can remember when many ladies, most ladies, carried a box, nay, 2 boxes to Tabatière and Bonbonnière. What lady carries snuff box now, hey? Suppose your astonishment, if a lady in an assembly were to offer you a prize? I can remember a lady with such a box as this, with a tour, as we used to call it then, with panniers, with a tortoise-shell cane, with the prettiest little high-heeled velvet shoes in the world. Ah, that was a time, that was a time. Ah, Eliza, Eliza, I have thee now in my mind's eye. At Bungay on the Waveney, did I not walk with thee, Eliza? Aha, did I not love thee? Did I not walk with thee then? Do I not see thee still? This was passing strange. My ancestress, but there is no need to publish her revered name, did indeed live at Bungay St. Mary's, where she lies buried. She used to walk with a tortoise-shell cane. She used to wear little black velvet shoes, with the prettiest high heels in the world. Did you know, then, my great GRNDM, sir? I said. He pulled up his coat sleeve. Is that her name? He said. Eliza, there, I declare, was the very name of the kind old creature written in red on his arm. You knew her old, he said, divining my thoughts with his strange knack. I knew her young and lovely. I danced with her at the Berry Ball. Did I not, dear, dear miss, as I live, he here mentioned dear G.R. Nye's maiden name. Her maiden name was. Her honored married name was. She married dear great GRNDFTHR the year posit and won the Newmarket plate, Mr. Pinto dryly remarked. Merciful powers! I remember, over the old shagreen knife and spoon case on the sideboard in my G.R. Nye's parlor, a print by Stubbs of that very horse. My grandsire, in a red coat, and his fair hair flowing over his shoulders, was over the mantelpiece, and posit and won the Newmarket Cup in the year 1783. Yes, you are right. I danced a minuet with her at Berry that very night, before I lost my poor leg. And I quarreled with your grand, ha! As he said, eh? There came 3 quiet little taps on the table. It is the middle table in the Raisin Coffee House, under the bust of the late Duke of WLLNGTN. I fired in the air, he continued, did I not? Tap, tap, tap. Your grandfather hit me in the leg. He married 3 months afterwards. Captain Brown, apostrophe, I said, who could see Miss SMTH without loving her? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she is there. She is there. Tap, tap, tap. S, my first love, but here there came tap, tap, which everybody knows means oh. I forgot, he said, with a faint blush stealing over his wan features, she was not my first love. In German, my own country, there was a young woman, tap, tap, tap. There was here quite a lively little treble knock. And when the old man said, but I loved thee better than all the world, Eliza, the affirmative signal was briskly repeated. and this I declare upon my honor. There was, I have said, a bottle of port wine before us, I should say a decanter. That decanter was lifted up, and out of it into our respective glasses two bumpers of wine were poured. I appeal to Mr. Hart, the landlord. I appeal to James, the respectful and intelligent waiter, if this statement is not true. And when we had finished that magnum, and I said, for I did not now in the least doubt of her presence here, G.R. Nye, may we have another magnum, the table distinctly rapped, oh. Now, my good sir, Mr. Pinto said, who really began to be affected by the wine, you understand the interest I have taken in you. I loved Eliza, of course I don't mention family names, knew you had that box which belonged to her, I will give you, what you like for that box. Name your price at once, and I pay you on the spot. Why, when we came out, you said you had not sixpence in your pocket. Bah! Give you anything you like, 50, 100, 1,000 pound. Come, come, said I, the gold of the box may be worth 9 guineas, and the faken we will put at 6 more. 1,000 guineas, he screeched. 1,050 pound, dear. And he sank back in his chair, no, by the way, on his bench, for he was sitting with his back to one of the partitions of the boxes, as I dare say James remembers. Don't go on in this way, I continued, rather weakly, for I did not know whether I was in a dream. If you offer me 1,000 guineas for this box, I must take it. Mustn't I, dear G.R. Nye? The table most distinctly said, yes, and putting out his claws to seize the box, Mr. Pinto plunged his hooked nose into it, and eagerly inhaled some of my 47 with a dash of Hardman. But stay, you old harpy, I exclaimed, being now in a sort of rage, and quite familiar with him. Here is the money? Where is the check? James, a piece of notepaper and a receipt stamp. This is all mighty well, sir, I said, but I don't know you. I never saw you before. I will trouble you to hand me that box back again, or give me a check with some known signature. Whose? Ha, ha, ha. The room happened to be very dark. Indeed, all the waiters were gone to supper, and there were only two gentlemen snoring in there. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.